all the hackers and the crackers.
To the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll sue you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me do my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused a fight between Un and Jay-Z. To CG, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones? And NASDAQ leave you flat on your back? Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack.
This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RANs, zips, SIPs. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
Hello, Ben Lev!
Are you ready to OMG rock?
Welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode 93.
Coming to you on April 26, 2005. I am Stank Dog. Oh,
and I am Not Dairy, back after a long sabbatical.
And we are going to rock you tonight, but...
Rock-sore you.
We are going to rock-sore your sock-sores and your box-sores.
Oh, well, watch the boxer talk.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm only going sack-free from now on, buddy.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so let's jump into the housekeeping this morning. I am not going to make it. How many times have we had to stop and restart this show because you keep making me laugh? Okay.
I think this is retry 93 of episode 93. We've been on the phone for about 6 hours now.
Oh, my goodness. We got so many outtakes, I don't even record them anymore. Yeah. All right, anyway, yes, let's take care of some housekeeping. First thing to announce this week is that for those of you who don't know, we have made some changes to our official IRC server. We switched from Esprinet over to DALNet. So, yes, irc.dal.net sometimes acts kind of noobish, will not exactly connect you always, so pick a specific server. And I put a specific server on the link to the website that will connect you through the Florida server, which is the most reliable one that I found. Maybe because it's in Florida, I don't know. But anyway, so far it's been, you know, people are resistant to change. I know people are like, why are we leaving Esprinet? Well, because Esprinet sucks. Esprinet doesn't let us have bots and a lot of other things we'd like to run. We'd like to have some F-Serve for people to get the shows off of it. Some other things we're working on right now. Some statistics that we're going to watch on it, so it's going to be kind of fun, some other things we're going to do. And DALNet is, the more important thing is that DALNet's a larger audience. There's a lot more people on there, a lot of other channels, and people have a tendency to idle in multiple channels at one time, so you can kind of cross over. Hopefully we'll get some walk-in traffic from other channels, and they will find out about Ben Rev and start listening to the show, visiting the site, etc., etc. It's all about spreading the word and sharing and getting more people involved. So, you know, being on Esprinet, while it may work fine for now and everything, it just really kind of feels, I don't know, snobby or exclusive, like we're somehow trying to exclude ourselves, that you have to be on Esprinet or you're not cool or something. I don't want to give that vibe or that feeling. So, going over to DALNet, and that is the official IRC server, and channel is #BenRev. And that's where all the DDP members are hanging out regularly. We're all making a conscious effort to idle there if we're not there chatting a lot. But you know what? I mean, at any given time, there's usually at least 4 or 5 or 6 of us there, at least idling. So, I mean, with our different schedules, you're bound to find one or all of us online at any given time. So it's been pretty fun the first week or so here. So if you want to drop in and ask us questions or comment on the show or something like that, feel free to do it. And we have updated the website that all you got to do is click on it. It'll fire up your IRC client of choice and connect you where you need to go.
Word.
So that is the first thing. And a quick shout at the beginning to, I hope this is Gelada or Gelada.
I would say Gelada.
Gelada, who made the graphics change for us. So the front site, he updated the font a little bit, changed the server to Dialnet for us. So thanks and shouts to him for that. And, not Theory, do you have any housekeeping for Bell's Mind? You made a lot of... We can't go housekeeping from, like, the last time you were on the show because it's been so long and you've made so many changes. But is there anything, like, recently that jumps off your head?
I'm trying to think of anything. There's a couple of things that are, like, right in the pipe. They're so close to being released, but they're not quite there yet. So I would hold off on that. I've added, you know, the latest FinRev shows for a stint there on the PBX. I had forgotten to do the shows for, like, you know, like 2 months or something like that. Somebody brought it to my attention, and I updated them all, so that's all set up now. The Bell's Mind bot is back online. I don't know if I talked about that last time. The AIM bot had gone offline a couple of times. It still does some weird stuff. You know, I just don't have the time to really maintain it too much, but it should be back online as we speak right now. So I think that's the most important stuff. I don't think I've added anything too insanely cool. Oh, there's an indicator that will now show if people are hanging out on the Bell's Mind 666 conference. That's like the default conference where people, you know, go in and hang out and maybe branch off to other conferences from there. But that's the public one that everybody knows about. So if you go to the main page, bellsmind.net, and you see that the logo is green, or, like, you know, the Bell's Mind logo is filled in green, that means the people are on the conference. Also, if you go to the page where it shows you the numbers people have recently submitted, it also will say there are people on the 666 conference or there are not people on the 666 conference. And it updates whenever you reload the page. So if you don't want to dial in, you're cheap, you got a calling card or something like that, you don't want to waste your minutes calling in if nobody's there, that's what you can check.
I think that's an awesome feature. I think that's very cool.
It's okay.
I like it. I think it's cool. Not as cool, however, as our email theme music.
Radio@finrev.com.
All right, so stop.
Okay, terrific.
You're going to make me laugh right through the theme music. All right. We got a lot of email again this week, so we're going to try to get through this as quickly as humanly possible. Let's see how. All right, so let me keep an eye on the clock here. Our first email this week comes from Booter. Booter says, I have two questions. When, among some other things, I have to trim some of these emails down a little bit to the parts that I think are worth reading on the air that I think might interest people. So he says, I have two questions. When is the social engineering show coming up? And when can you get Alonka on another show? I've been looking at some fairly easy codes now, and I can already begin to crack the messages before I get done reading the original encrypted message. Props to Simon Sings, the code book, for writing a badass book. Booter, thank you for the email again, and I will try to get Alonka on the show again. I actually haven't spoken to her in a while, so I need to give her a call anyway and see if I can get her on again soon. That was a very popular show, and a lot of people liked her being on the show, so we'll try to do a follow-up with that. As far as the social engineering show, that one's a little bit tougher because it's just such an all-encompassing topic. Social engineering is not something that can be taught in one sitting. I can't, you know, you can sit down and learn a certain programming topic. You can sit down and learn a certain router configuration or just about any kind of technical topic. But social engineering is just one of those things that takes a lot of practice and a lot of general common sense techniques that you just can't cover everything in one show. So I'm trying to think.
Definitely.
Yeah, I'm trying
and
to think.
Social engineering is also a lot of making mistakes. You have to be willing to put yourself on the line and try to social engineer somebody and make a mistake so that you can learn from it later on. Because you're not going to make every single call perfectly. You're just going to have to learn how to deal with it. So
absolutely.
There's a lot of that.
Absolutely. And people who've listened to the previous telephonic craptaculars have heard a few of the failures and a few of the successes.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, and I'm trying to come up with a way to approach that topic and cover it as much as possible, and I don't know that it'll be a one-show thing, maybe a multiple-show, and I have a very specific idea in line, actually. I am going to try to get that done within the next 10 episodes or so keep an eye out for that. All right. Next email comes from Havoc. Havoc, of course, who is a longtime big fan of Default Radio. But anyway, Havoc says, among a lot of other things, but he asks, are there any rights to use this logo or symbol, BR? And BR, of course, the Binary Revolution logo that you see on the front of the magazines and the website, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's the break tag in HTML, so we can't really, you know, really claim too much of a copyright or anything like that, intellectual property. However, we could, you know, I guess push for trademark, trade symbol for the way that we use it. But no, absolutely not. I mean, it's silly. That logo, just like everything else on our site, the radio show, the articles and stuff that I write, anything that we put out there, I put out there anyway, falls under that same Creative Commons license, and you can find it on the website, on any of the pages, on the bottom right-hand side, you can click on it. Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works License. But basically it says you're free to use it, just don't make any money. You can use it, you can put it on whatever you want, just don't sell it, don't make any money, and don't claim that it's yours. Give us credit that it's our logo, because we want you to, you know, link to us. Use it for graphics, use it for wallpaper, use it for whatever, link back to us. If you're going to make up, like, a new website called Body Repair or something and use the BR logo, that would kind of suck. You know, I hope we wouldn't use it for that, but yeah, if you want to use it for any kind of links, wallpaper, reference back to us, you know, whatever. Yeah, we're pretty much open with it. Just don't make money and don't claim that it's you. That's all we really ask out of it. So, yeah, and that includes you can make stuff with it, you know. It's like just try to keep us in the loop. And if there is a question, email us and ask us. For the most part, we're not worried about it. We don't make money off of it. We just don't want anybody else to. I think that's not too much to ask. So, yes, that is the answer to that. Why don't you read the next email for us, Not Theory, if you will. Let me give my voice a break after that rock and roll intro.
Oh, yeah, man. Our metal voices are just taking it out of us. I'll give it a shot. I'm not really sure I remember how to read, but I'll give it a whirl here.
All right.
So this email is from Alex X, did I say? Yeah, Alex X. He says, hi, I've been listening to your show and really enjoying it. In your 91st episode, you mentioned Windows 2003 server and some shit about it. I got a copy from this certification company, and they have some setup where their copy doesn't really check licensing. They have one copy and can install it on as many machines as they want. They then feedback to Microsoft about how many computers are using it and pay up. Windows 2000 server volume license. So we got this copy. 5 minutes on Google gave me a fully working license on my first go. No checking, no phoning home. Windows 2003 is shit on drivers. Most shit works on it, but there are no actual drivers that exist for it. I guess he means outside of the default install. I managed to get my hardware working on it, but I was lucky with old and generic hardware. Have fun. 2003 is a cool piece of software, not as powerful as Unix, but the GUI stuff really gives it an edge. Anyway, nice show.
All right. Well, thank you, Alex X. And for those of you who didn't listen, I think one or two shows ago, well, actually, I think it's more than that, I mentioned that I installed Windows 2003 server on one of my Boxen, and basically the only reason is because I'm studying the MCDBA track, the Microsoft Certified Database Administrator, and part of that track is that you have to learn either Windows 2000 or 2003 server. So I'm doing it because it's part of my certification path and because I don't mind. I like learning new stuff no matter what it is. So I throw it on the box, and I actually want to, not only do I want to do it to learn it, I'd actually like to set it up and use it as a domain controller and yada, 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 authenticate against it. Well, see, the thing is, I don't know how long I'm going to be at this particular job.
Oh, man, that's your fucking story of your life, dude.
Yeah, I know. I figured I wanted my own license, so I went and got a legal copy of it. The thing is, with those site licenses, the company that you got that from, even if you did go out and get a key, I suspect, and I've heard a lot of things, especially about the server 2003, even more so than 2000, it does report back to Microsoft. I don't know how closely they monitor to watch it, but for our site license, for example, even if I did take it home, when I activate it, they have that activation process they started a while back, it reports back. And it has an activation code tied to it, and they know whose license it is. Now, I don't know what crack you used, if it maybe does bypass that somehow, but somebody's probably is going to end up paying for that copy of it. And if it's that agent certification company or whatever that you're talking about, they're probably going to end up paying for it somehow, even if you used a key, a different key. When it activates, I think it's got enough information in there to uniquely identify it these days. I could be wrong. Do you know anything about that, not theory? Is that...
I really, honestly, I'm so out of the window scene, I have no clue about anything anymore.
Yeah, I really, really think that they monitor that really closely these days. Really closely. So, now the second part to that is the company in question that does have that, especially if it's a larger company, they may not notice one extra box or five extra boxes or whatever on it. So, anyway, be careful. But, frankly, I got a licensed copy. And, you know, the bottom line about software is, I think you'll agree with me on this. Whether it's an operating system or a game or anything, there's basically three steps you can take with software. You can either, A, pay what they're asking and shut the fuck up about it. It's either worth it or it's not. You'll pay for it or you won't. Or B, you find a cheaper alternative. There are alternative software out there. There's open source software. There's free. There's just cheaper versions. You know, there's not only one Microsoft Office. There's OpenOffice. There's StarOffice. There's WordPerfect Suite. There's AmiPro. Is AmiPro still around? I don't know. There's tons of them. There's always options. So get a cheaper, different, or free one. Or, you know, as we've said many times, write your own. Roll your own software. Actually, absolutely. Go out to SourceForge and modify something that already exists if you have to. But, I mean, those are really your three options. I guess you have to acknowledge the fourth option of getting a pirated copy, but I can't come out and condone and endorse that. I don't. I don't condone piracy. I really don't. Some stuff is...
I've got to tell you, there's not really all that much proprietary pay software that I think is so good that I would need to use anyway. So, I mean, I've found free alternatives to pretty much everything I need. Now, my needs as a programmer probably don't match up everybody else, of course, but I don't know. The Microsoft products that I've seen, they're not worth paying for at all.
Yeah, so. And that's a good point. If the software is just poorly written, like some Microsoft is, let's admit, some of it I like, but some of it's not, or ridiculously priced, you know, then I just choose not to support it. If it's just so ridiculously, or it's not very well done, don't buy it, period.
Right.
Just don't support it. That's your option.
Yes, and exactly. When I say that this Microsoft software is not worth buying, I don't mean it's worth pirating. It's not worth
having, using
because it's terrible.
It's just not worth having. You're right.
Yeah. That's what I mean when I say it's not worth buying, because you do have to buy it.
And luckily, more people are taking that stance and looking at it from that point of view, and that's what's pushing the open source movement. That's why you've got a big resurgence, if you will, frankly, it is, if you want to think of the old term freeware from back in the day, shareware and freeware, open source software is kind of a freeware thing, you know, to a certain extent, as long as you're not using it for, you know, you have to look at each individual license, but for the most part, it's open source because they want you to use it, so you can take it and do whatever you want with it. So more people do seem to be looking at it from that point of view and writing their own stuff or finding alternatives, so that's what's making good software come back. That's why there's a revival of lots of software and lots of people working on software right now. So I think that's really cool. All right, let me do this next email here from Unity. Unity says, in episode 83, Lucky and Doug were arguing about caller ID. This is one of the episodes that Lucky and Doug hosted.
Yeah, I heard this one.
Okay, I can't remember if it was Lucky or Doug, but one of them mentioned, quote, fixing, end quote, caller ID by taking it out of band. Sounds a lot like making a consumer version of Annie. I doubt people would go for that, but then again, that's what marketing is for. I don't understand why the argument for caller ID. CID is good, that's just my two cents. Anyway, you guys have a good show. I recommend people listen to your show whenever I can, but that's mostly just because it's really one of the only shows where I can hear people saying things like Leet and Fajir on the radio. Oh, and the fact that I can hear old episodes on Bell's Mind, how appropriate is that comment when you're on the show, is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Unity, for that email.
This is Elite email, and I Fajir it.
I am Fajiring the Fajirness of the Eliteness. We speak Leet.
Oh, yeah.
That would make a good t-shirt slogan. I speak Leet, therefore I am Leet.
Oh, my God.
What a great t-shirt that would be.
You know somebody's going to be selling that at DEF CON now without your permission.
And it'll be black. white letters on a black shirt, because that's the cheapest thing you can get.
No way, man. We're going to make hacker shirts that are pink shirts with blue text, sky blue.
Like polka dots and like purple and green.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And beanies with propellers on the top.
Oh, definitely. Motorized propellers. That way you don't have to, like, get out of your chair to make it move.
We'll make the little hats where you put the beer cans in the side of it with the straw.
Oh, man, those are the best.
We'll put the BenRev logo on it, though. Yeah.
Oh, we can have it the Beer Revolution hat. There we go.
BR, baby. Beer Revolution. Now, all right, what about this? What about this caller ID comment here?
Okay, okay. I think I remember when they were talking about this, and Lucky was saying that caller ID is broken and useless, and I think Doug, if I have it correctly, I think Doug said that eventually somebody will come out with a new caller ID box that works in a different way so that people can't mess with it anymore. Now, the way I look at it is, first of all, caller ID is not being messed with between the central office and your phone unless you're using, like, an orange box. If somebody's spoofing caller ID, they're spoofing it before it even gets to your, you know, before it gets to your caller ID box. Caller ID box is not doing the work. It's the phone switch. So fixing your caller ID box is not going to matter. They have to fix the actual phone switches. So when somebody passes it a bogus CPN or ANI, whatever you want to call it, everyone's got a different name for it now. Whenever you pass it a bogus one of those, their way to fix it is they'd have to do some homework and try to figure out if it looks legit, and if it does, pass it through. If it doesn't, then do out of area. There's been rumors that Verizon is doing this in some areas already. They're looking at, you know, they're looking at it, trying to figure out if it's legit, and throwing it away if it's not. So that's how you could fix caller ID. But as far as fixing it on the customer end, I don't think anything needs to be done because I don't think the customer end of it's broken. But yeah, I agree. Caller ID is good. You know, Lucky always says that, you know, you can't depend on it, so why even bother? You know, sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. You know, it's just like anything else, you got to deal with it.
Yeah, well, your typical...
It's not perfect.
Yeah, your typical average everyday person can depend on it.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And I feel that way. Doug feels that way. Lucky doesn't. But, you know, he's got his points, though. I guess Lucky hangs out with a lot of people that spoof caller ID. So,
right. Well, that's,
you know, for
thing.
Him, it's probably not as valuable. But, you know, for my parents, you know, my parents' friends... don't spoof caller ID. They could, theoretically, but they don't. So it's not an issue for them.
Well, they could use one of those new online services that are popping up everywhere that let you dial a number and buy some minutes, you know, those things.
Yeah, yeah, you could use one of those. But most, the majority of people in the United States, if you look percentage-wise, people who use phones versus people who use caller ID spoofing, I'm sure that the percentage of people who use phones that use both are very small. You know, it's not like 50% of people are using these services, because if they were, then the people making these services would be fucking billionaires at this point. And they're not, I don't think. So,
well, certainly not a lot of them.
Yeah, caller ID is definitely worthwhile. And if somebody spoofs their caller ID to you, and it looks like your parents are calling or something like that, and it's really some guy who's harassing you about something, you fucking hang up.
Yeah, you've still
and then
got
when
that.
Your parents call you back 2 seconds later, you say, oh, it's probably this guy spoofing the number again. I'll let it go to voicemail. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's a cat and mouse game, and I don't want to, like, lay down and play dead. You know, sometimes caller ID works, sometimes it doesn't. So I'm not just going to give up on it entirely.
Good response to that. Man, you know what? We've got not only that. We've already had a couple emails that were, like, perfectly suited for you to answer, and I think there's some more coming up.
I just wanted to say to Unity that I appreciate the feedback on the old episodes on Bell's Mind. As far as I know, there's only one person who listens to it, and it's Whitesword. I keep it up to date for Whitesword because he asks me about it all the time. He's like, oh, are you going to have the new episode? He's not, like, harassing me about it, but he asks me about it all the time, so I put it up for him. But now that I know that two people are using it, maybe I'll stay more on top of it.
Well,
but
can't
as far,
you...
As far as I can tell, nobody's really using it other than you guys. So
well,
if anybody else is using it out there, email me and let me know so I'll... you know, keep up on it and not let it fall behind like it did. So.
Email you at?
Oh, let me think. ntheory@bellsmind.net.
Okay.
Probably.
All right. And what about, shouldn't the podcast, shouldn't that help you a lot? Can't you grab the podcast, which is updated, you know, pretty much immediately, and grab the show from there and, like, automate it so you're hands off, you don't have to remember?
You know something? I talked to somebody about this a while. I don't remember if it was you or maybe Natish. We were talking about podcasting and doing something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I just haven't gotten around to doing it. You know, I'm aware of podcasting. I know, you know, what it's all about. But I'm not really into it with a point where I can just hammer out a script real quick and have it all done. I mean, I'm sure if I sat down for like an hour, I could probably do it. I just haven't been motivated. You know, I go into the server, you know, once a week or something like that and do maintenance, and conveniently your shows come out once a week. So, you know, I do a bunch of stuff, and at the same time I download the show and update it. So.
You won't have to sit down an hour. You'll sit down 5 minutes. It's super simple. But anyway.
Okay, fair enough.
All right.
So I'm reading this next email from Luminaire, I think is how that's pronounced.
I think so.
And he says, "Hey, Stank, I've really been enjoying the show lately. You've always had interesting content, but the more recent shows have had much better content, technically speaking, that has really made it much more enjoyable. In regards to your brief conversation about data centers in episode 90, there's a forum on DSL Reports that is nothing but photos of big iron broadband gear at data centers and data centers. Hope you enjoy. www.dslreports.com/forum/bbphotos.
I was going to save you having to read that, and I tiny URL'd it.
Ah, okay. Well, now I can read the tiny URL, too.
Okay.
tinyurl.com/bsh8w.
Yeah, and now see, and this is a good, you didn't realize I was going to go here, but the way you pronounce that is a great segue into some fun I actually had from this email. Which, thank you for the email, of course, but I actually started playing around because of this email. First of all, I went there and looked at some of the pictures, and actually, let's talk about that before I go into my little, because I had some fun with this. But before we do,
okay. Did
you hear episode 90 when we were talking about just, to me, I know it's really corny and this is just a geek thing. To me, it really is a beautiful thing to see a nice, big, clean data center with the server, I don't mean seeing a bunch of Dell servers or a rack mount. I mean going in and seeing Sun boxes and AS400s and mainframes, raised floors and Halon systems and alarms and under checking for water leaks and air conditioned control. That's just, when it's done right, it's a thing of beauty. It's a work of art to me. And I love it.
Oh, I totally agree.
Have you seen, have you got any good stories of some that you've been to or you've seen?
Well, I've been in a couple of data centers. I have, the Bell's Mine machine is located in Virginia. I got to check out that data center. That was more kind of the run-of-the-mill data center. Like you said, a lot of Dell machines, a lot of rack mount stuff, but also like shelves that had, you know, just regular full-size machines on it, some XPCs in there. It was an interesting mix of stuff. I've also got co-location in Manhattan at this 55 Broad Street, which is pretty popular for people in Manhattan to co-locate at. That place was very cool. That place was more like no bullshit, like serious machines, you know, like 5U boxes just stuffed full of hard drives everywhere, dropped floors, all that kind of stuff. And, just hardware lying all around it. These guys are like, you know, they're ordering machines for people. So they had a whole room full of empty boxes from computers. There must have been 100 empty boxes of these computers that they were putting together. They had fucking terabytes of hard drives just laying on this table waiting to be installed. Like, cool stuff like that is interesting.
Keep talking.
It's interesting to me. So I've been in a couple data centers like that, definitely.
Keep talking. I'm getting aroused.
Oh, yeah, baby. Actually, I'll tell you the coolest data center I've ever been in. My previous job, I was doing some video processing stuff, and I got to go to the Cablevision head end in Manhattan. Now, that place has some fucking seriously cool hardware. They have real-time MPEG-2 video encoders for their digital channels. They have huge banks of hard drives for their video-on-demand services. We got to see how all that stuff ties together. And they have, you know, huge coax runs all the way up to the roof where they have satellite dishes. And it's just, that kind of stuff is awesome. That is not like regular, you know, co-location and web hosting type stuff. That is real serious hardware that's got to be up 24 hours a day, so that everybody can watch all these channels. We could watch channels being fed to Brooklyn, Manhattan, the Bronx. We could see, like, every single piece of hardware that it went through mapped out on this computer and where it was going and when hardware was, like, flaky or about to fail and automatic failover and that kind of stuff. That stuff is awesome.
Yeah.
That was I was really down with that.
And the ones that have, like, a nice control center where you have, like, your main consoles and access to everything from one spot and sometimes a nice big screen with a map of everything and what's up and down and stuff like that.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Awesome.
This had all that kind of stuff. We could even watch and see on their video on demand. They had a regular setup for their video encoders to tell them like which ones were encoding which channels and all that stuff. But they had a new system they had just set up that we were checking out that showed their video on demand stuff, and we could actually watch and see on the screen as people were requesting shows what was being requested. So that was very cool stuff. And they were building another new room that had just flat panels all along the wall. Where they could watch all kinds of stuff. Like they were getting video feeds from all around the country, and they could watch when stuff was coming in and where different demand in Manhattan was for different shows, and the you know the bandwidth for people's cable modems and stuff, because that stuff went through the same head end. The bandwidth spikes for cable modems in different regions of Manhattan, it was just awesome.
Pay-per-view bukkake?
What's that?
Pay-per-view bukkake?
Oh, there was tons of that. They have 20 terabits of bandwidth dedicated to that.
Oh,
so.
That's sweet. Yeah,
yeah,
and also it's not only
negative one, and you're set.
Yeah, it's not only the actual computers and systems, but it's also it's the whole package. Having you know, seeing the UPS and looking, and you're like, holy cow! Look at the size of that UPS. You know, look at the power and the backup generators and just all the other actually machine room type stuff that goes along with
well.
And one of the little things, if you ever do have an opportunity to go visit one of these, or look for one nearby and ask for a tour or something like that if you can. One of the things, and again, this is a geek thing, one of the little things that I appreciated is, if you can, most of them also have a nice raised floor, and you don't think about it until you really look, go out of your way to look for it, but you'll notice you don't see any wires coming out of these, so very few of them. They're nice and organized, especially if you see a big switch. Like a phone switching and stuff like that, when you got the cables are all tied nice and clean and color coordinated, and oh, that's a beautiful thing. But follow them where they go under that raised floor. Grab those little suction cup things, lift a section of the floor up, and look underneath of it. That's
oh, yeah.
A beautiful, beautiful sight to me. All those cables running wild under there. It is just a jungle, an electronic jungle going underneath there. And you'll, when you pitch, when you stick your head under there, you'll feel the cold. You'll feel and Fajir, the cold breeze, the cold breeze that blows underneath of there that's being circulated. It's just beautiful. It really amazing sight.
Yeah, the data centers that I've been in, like you walk in and you're just freezing right away. It doesn't matter what time of year it is because they're the ones, except for the Cablevision head end, that was, I think that was on like the 14th floor of some building in Manhattan. But the other ones that I've been to have all been in the basement of different buildings, or the sub-basement, or in 55 Broad Street, I think it's the sub-basement. You know, it's like three stories or four stories underground, and they are just freezing. If you're not going in there with like a sweater in the middle of the summer, you're screwed.
Yeah, when I worked in some data centers, and I could go in there for 3 or 4 minutes, and like if I had to go do something quick at the console or change some tapes or just go type a couple quick commands, you're all right. But if you're going to be in there more than that, oh yeah, I kept a jacket in my office, or my cubicle, I should say. I had a CubeLAN thing going on. Keep a jacket in your cube, you know, 24/7. You just kept one on there because if you're going to go in there for any length of time, you've got to have a jacket. All right, but anyway, back to the fun I had from this email was actually with tiny URLs, not exactly related to the email, but because what I like to do for the listeners, I just heard a strange sound from the phone. I hope you're still there.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. This was kind of a long URL, which Not Theory already read for you, but I tiny URL'd this, but I did not like the tiny URL it created, and Not Theory hesitated, I don't know if you realized it, when he read it. Because he wanted to make sure he enunciated, because the tiny URL it created was B as in boy, S as in Sam, but then it was H as in Henry, and the number 8, and then a W as in William. Well, that H and the 8, the number, are very close together, and especially on the radio, if you don't enunciate clearly, which he did, it could be easily confused. And I didn't want to. I wanted a new one. I didn't like the one that it gave me. So I learned something about tiny URL and started playing around with this. I didn't like that link that it gave me, so I went right back to the same site and created another tiny URL off the same thing And I found out something that I didn't know. Maybe you didn't. I know you like Tiny URL a lot, but I don't know if you've ever been faced with this. But when I put in that same URL, it gave me the same Tiny URL. It's actually smart enough. And this is great from an administrative standpoint, from a design standpoint. It gave me the same Tiny URL again. It didn't generate a new one. It was smart enough to search its database and obviously key on that URL that I sent it to find that there was one already exists. Now, people who aren't familiar with Tiny URL, it will take any URL you give it and give it a short URL, tinyurl.com/, and then a 5-character number. Well,
right.
and they don't expire. They never expire, according to them. So
right.
It keeps them. So this thing searches through the database, realizes that it's already been made once before, and it gives you the Tiny URL that already exists. I never thought about it before, but when you create a Tiny URL sometimes, it may not be generating it. It may be pulling it from a database from someone else who already generated it.
Yeah, actually, when I first found out about Tiny URL, I did come across this, and it was because I was trying to find as many ways as I could to trick this particular person that I was friends with at the time into going to www.goatse.cx.
Right.
So, and Tiny URL at the time was not big. Like, it had just started up, at least from what I could tell. Maybe it was there earlier, but I had just started hearing about it from people. So I was like, how am I going to trick this guy into doing it? So I sent him a Tiny URL that pointed to it. And then he's like, ha, 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 very funny, whatever. He went to it and got tricked. But then I went back to it again to try to generate another, and exactly what you said happened. I got the same Tiny URL.
Interesting.
I think back then you could trick it by, like, slapping junk on the end of the URL, like an actual, like a question mark or something
right.
that wouldn't affect the URL.
Exactly.
Would,
and that's exactly what I'm getting ready to talk about, is that you can absolutely still do that.
Oh, you can. Okay, I figured maybe they had changed it so that you couldn't do some simple stuff anymore.
Right.
Get around that.
Some stuff it does not allow you. It has to be something that doesn't actually change the final location of the URL. It has to still end up there. And a question mark, I didn't particularly try that, but that probably would work because it's going to basically ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
So because it's not a valid character, it should ignore it and just use the rest of it. But what I did is just adding an extra slash on the end of it. If it's just a directory, you can get away. And that's what this was, so that's I just put an extra slash because we know that it treats that as just a redundant forward slash. So it won't go anywhere, it won't redirect it or anything like that. You could also put in a dot slash, if you've read my directory transversal article in Binary Revolution Magazine 2.1, pimp pimp. You'd realize there's a lot of other ways to point to it. And basically, that's what I found out. You can throw an extra backslash, again, maybe a question mark, as you said. And yes, it goes to the exact same place, but Tiny URL is not smart enough to acknowledge that. It treats it as though it has one extra character, and it is doing a literal field-to-field comparison. And if it doesn't match literally to the first URL, it has the extra slash, it will generate a new URL for you, a new Tiny URL for you.
Yeah,
so
well,
you know,
parsing URLs is a real pain. So
yeah.
I think they're better off doing it the way that they do it.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's definitely a great idea from their side, the design standpoint, and it's kind of interesting to think that, you know, that Goatsy link that you made, someone else probably made 500 times before you. You're all getting the same one, you just don't even know it. So
exactly.
It's kind of interesting to think about that. Just for proof of concept, if people want to see exactly what I'm talking about, the first Tiny URL I gave was BSH8W. I also, just as proof of concept, made three more. I'm sorry, is that a G or a Q? That's a Q. AQSS4, then DFDG7, and finally DPTHC. Go look at all three of those. It'll tell you the original URL if you look those up. I think it will, actually. Maybe I should correct me. I'm not sure if it will show you that. I think it'll show you the original URL. It'll definitely take you to the resulting site, and if you look in the URL up in the nav bar, you will see what it took you to, and you will see different ones for each one of those. You'll end up at the same place because, like I said, it doesn't affect anything. But it does give you a unique number. So if you do need it for, like, because I had a valid reason. It's hard for me to read that on the air and enunciate properly. So I had a valid reason for it. So, again, the article in Binary Revolution Magazine about directory transversal, there's some crossover topics, the same thought process, some of the same things I explained in there, you'll understand why they can be used in other ways. But understanding that can get you a lot of other things. It opens your mind to a lot of other possibilities, and this is one of them. So, yeah,
this
that's
actually,
the...
reminds me of something that I could just step in here really quickly.
Sure.
I don't remember where I saw it, but I saw an article recently about security and generating, you know, people usually pick really dumb passwords. You know, they pick, like, their dog's name or something like
password,
that.
Password, God, sex, and secret.
What's that?
Password, God, sex, and secret.
Oh, dude, why did you have to drop my password?
Wasn't that from hackers? Wasn't that the four most commonly used passwords or something? Anyway.
I think it was sex, love, and seek, or God. I don't know what that
was. I don't remember either.
Anyway, but this article was talking about how people usually choose really bad passwords. So some system administrators randomly generate passwords and give them to users and make them, you know, force them to remember them. They say it's a bad thing because people end up writing these passwords down and, you know, or forgetting them entirely and having to have them reset all the time. So what some system administrators were doing was they were generating a bunch of random passwords, and you could select from a list and say, I can remember this one most easily,
right?
Which is a little bit better idea. But this new guy was talking about generating a random string, but that had words that made sense. Like it was like kind of like a sentence of just random words slapped together. So it'd be easier to remember. Like it's easier for you to remember, you know, the quick brown fox jumped something, one of those types of sentences. It's easier to remember something like that than whatever that URL was, BSH8W.
Right.
So this guy was saying the best way to do it is to just generate like a random sentence, maybe with some numbers or something in it, and then let people choose that. Your passwords are longer, but it's easier for people to remember, and they don't have to keep getting their passwords reset. So I think if somebody came out with a tiny URL that generated something that was a little more readable and pronounceable, and I think that some tiny URLs have a mix of case of letters, like sometimes there's an uppercase letter in there somewhere.
No, you can't have mixed case in a URL, can you? Well, yeah, I guess obviously you have to.
Yeah.
That's right. You can't have it in the domain name, but you absolutely can have it in the path.
Right, and I think, don't quote me on this, but I think that I've seen tiny URLs that have, like, one uppercase letter in it or something like that. I think it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
But I think if somebody came out with a tiny URL, a competitor or whatever, it's not like they charge money for it, but something like tiny URL that generated something that was a little easier to remember, I think it'd be more successful. I know a lot of people use tiny URL, but they run into the same problem that you're saying.
Right.
It's hard to pronounce them. It's hard to remember them. So, I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe that's something I'll do out of boredom one day.
I was going to say, it's not that
something up like that.
Yeah, it's absolutely not that difficult. It really isn't.
Yeah,
super simple, actually.
I'm actually going to commit on the show to doing that.
Uh-oh, another one?
This will take half an hour.
I was going to say, this is a 30-minute...
If it takes any longer than that, you can kick me out of the group.
I was going to say, that's a 30-minute project, seriously.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, yeah, I guess let's move on to another email. Now that, you know, I've taught everybody how to DOS tiny URL...
I'm doing it right now. I actually just wrote a Perl script while I was going through that whole tirade about not being able to read tiny URLs. I'm DOSing them right now.
Write a little Perl script, just regex, and keep appending a slash on the end of it. Use a little recursion to keep extending it.
Oh, yeah.
It's over. All right, anyway, please don't do that, because we like tiny URL.
No, if you need the script to do that, email me. I'll send it to you.
All right, damn it. Why'd you say that? All right, next email. Let's see. You want to do this? No, I'll do this one. This is a long one. I'll read this one. This email is from Sephron,
I think.
All right, Sephron. Says, Dear Stank Dog and Not Theory. Doesn't say that, but whatever. For the past few shows, it says co-host. I'm parsing on the fly here. For the past few shows, you've tended to mention something about your connection or your ISP or other things similar to that nature. Sometimes you bitch. Well, yes, I do. Sometimes it's just general discussion about different services. Anyway, I wanted to tell you about the utter shambles that is some ISPs here in England. Oh, wait a minute. Can I do my English voice for this one?
A little bit.
Yeah, I'm going to continue. Let me give it a shot. My English voice is probably sounds like my Australian voice or my Chinese voice. But anyway, let's see. Here in England. Over here, all the phone lines... Wait a minute, is that English?
No, that's Australian.
Where the fuck? Over here, all the phone lines in the country are owned by one company, British Telecom. God, I suck at British accent.
Yeah, you might want to skip this one.
And you've got to pay line rental to them every bloody month for a telephone line, even though your service can go through other companies. So saying that you'd imagine BT, which is British Telecom, must be a pretty good and experienced company when it comes to all things telecommunication. Wrong. About 8 months ago, I took part in an experiment to try and extend to reach of broadband connections. I believe the line type is called RADSL. RADSL, what is that?
RADSL is rate adaptive DSL, as far as I know. It's a DSL that can change its speed based on the distance you are from the CO. It's got some type of fancy technique to figure out, you know, how far away from the CO you are, or just figure out general line conditions, like a regular modem. Mm-hmm. Kind of does negotiates and says, oh, there's this much noise, I'll try to go this speed. So if I'm correct, that RADSL is rate adaptive DSL.
Okay. He goes on to say, I was overjoyed when I learned this was becoming possible because I live in a rather remote village about 3 miles from the nearest exchange and was just out of range of broadband connection. So naturally, I signed up right away. I was told the experiment would last about a month and half would be totally free of charge. Oh, the experiment would last about a month and a half and would be totally free of charge. I'm new to this reading thing. What do you want me to tell you?
No, me too.
I was also told that after the experiment, the line would be totally terminated and I'd have to go back to my standard 56K connection. So answer me this. How come 8 months down the line are they still saying that we owe the money for British Telecom broadband? I don't know that I can answer that. Yes, I do have a broadband connection now, but my service is through Tesco, T-E-S-C-O, a completely separate ISP from British Telecom. My mum has tried for months to get this problem sorted out with several phone calls, letters, emails, and the lot. But so far, it's all come up with nothing. They seem unable to grasp, God, I'm horrible at an English accent, the simple fact we do not have broadband with them and that the free experimental trial was free. Their call takers are all as thick as pig shit, I guess I can read it when it's his email, and completely incapable of independent thought. They might as well be machines with built-in insults and belittling comments. So far, they reckon we owe them around £200, which I think is something like $380 for a service we've never even had. Even if the free experimental trial wasn't free, it should have only cost us £25 to £35 tops. Anyway, yeah, that's pretty much it. So count yourselves lucky over there in the States. You don't have complete incompetence like this. Oh, yeah, we do. Or at least not with the one overall controlling company. It's telephone lines. Oh, a little social engineering tip for you if you want to totally pwn a stupid call taker. Have your mom and dad constantly keep switching between talking to the person on the phone, and they'll soon transfer you to either a supervisor or they'll actually break away from the pre-programmed script written for them. If you do read this on the show, thanks, Tones. My mate will totally bow down to my leetness. Love the show and keep up with all the great content. Tones, bow down to the leetness of Sephron. Yeah, that was a little extra.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from, but I'm definitely for jeering.
That was pretty cool. So what do you have to say about all that there, buddy, Mr.
Mr. Telco, were you about to call me Mr. Telco?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was getting ready to call you.
You're probably going to call me shithead, I guess, actually. Anyway,
I just took a drink and you made me dribble all over myself. My drink, yeah, that is.
You know, telcos over here are incompetent too. And the bad thing is, like, there's so many of them that are incompetent, whereas you guys just have one incompetent one. So I guess it depends how you look at it.
We're getting back towards one these days, you know.
Yeah, we really are. There's somebody posted, I think it was Strom Carlson, posted a graphic that showed, like, the breakup and then the reassembling of the telcos.
I saw that. That was a very interesting graphic.
Yeah. There still are some independent telcos. Actually, there's still a lot of independent telcos around the U.S., but, you know, they're so small, they're in, like, one town that you never hear of them, and I'm sure they don't offer broadband. But, yeah, I can't figure out how you'd even be in their billing system.
Well,
that they would be trying to bill you for something like this.
Yeah, they obviously started off with the intent, with one intent, and I guess probably, is it possible they outsourced it to another company and you got caught up in their billing when they shouldn't have or something? It's...
Possible, but they should, British Telecom should, I assume that this person has one phone line going into their house. Did they say whether they did or not?
No, he didn't say. I mean, anything we say is going to be speculation, really, at this point.
Okay, fair enough. Let's assume he's only got one phone line, and he's got phone service from Tesco. Like he said, British Telecom owns all of those lines, so unless British Telecom thinks that they have both, they have two types of DSL on their phone line, one from Tesco and one from British Telecom. Like, something's got to be going wrong there.
But isn't it like the way we're set up where, you know, Bell South or AT&T or whoever owns the infrastructure, but they're forced to lease them out to, like, the CLEX and the smaller companies. So the smaller company pays a fee to use that line, a government regulation that forces them to give them a price to use the line, and that company will offer the service. Is it possible that this Tesco is like one of those type companies where they pay a fee to British Telecom to use the line, and British Telecom said, okay, here's our list of customers. Go ahead and start doing what you want to do with them. So maybe
I'm positive that that's how it works. And Tesco, in the U.S. terminology, would be a CLEC, which is a competitive local exchange carrier. And British Telecom would be the ILEC, which is the incumbent local exchange carrier. They own all of the lines, and like you said, they lease them out to other companies. But what I'm saying is that they may be getting dial tone service from British Telecom, but they may be getting DSL service from this other company. But British Telecom would have to have in their records something that says, okay, these guys are getting DSL from Tesco, so that they know how much to charge Tesco for the line use. But if they have that in their records, they can't have in their records that they have DSL from British Telecom. So that whole situation is weird. I wonder if Tesco may be providing him DSL service. He may be paying Tesco, but they may not be paying British Telecom for his line. So in order to resolve this, maybe I would go to Tesco and say to them, like, you know, British Telecom is trying to bill me for DSL service, which I have DSL service through you, and maybe have them handle it. Maybe even tell them you're thinking of canceling your DSL service because you're getting double billed for it. And maybe that'll make a move a little bit more.
You know what I would call? What were they called again? Tesco.
Tesco.
You know what I would say? I would call Tesco and say, are you ready to rock? That's just me, though.
Oh, my God.
That's just me. I'm just saying, if that were me, that's what I'd do.
And they'd pick up the phone and say, what the bloody hell are you talking about?
What the bloody hell are you talking about? I am so bad. Why am I having... screw it.
I can't do any accents either, other than...
But it's funny.
Are you ready to rock? That's about all I can.
Yeah, it's funny to try, though. All right.
Funny for you, not for me.
Yeah, well, you know, laughing at me and with me, who cares, as long as they're laughing. All right, our next email comes from... check this name out. I think I have to do a voice for this name. It just feels like I need to grunt this. This email comes from Booga! Booga!
Oh, some type of Street Fighter 2 character when you do that.
I don't know what. B-O-G-A-A. Booga! Booga says, hello, man. Like many people out there, I am a hacker who loves the show. I don't know.
What the hell are you doing?
I just make up voices sometimes.
Is this the fucking mayhem that goes on the show when I'm not around?
Exactly.
I'm cursing a lot. You're going to have to edit out every single curse I've done.
Oh, no.
And make a nice version. You got to make a clean version, recording industry does.
That is not happening. I'm surprised my neighbors aren't over here pounding on the door, by the way. It's like fucking 1 a.m. Anyway, let's see, where was I? Booga! Was saying, like many people out there, I'm a hacker who loves the show. All I can say is that it kicks ass. I have been downloading all episodes and listened to all of them in the past few weeks. I think the show is very useful for the starting hacker, as well as the more experienced. I truly enjoy the conversations. I hope you will be doing the show for a very, very long time in the future. Unfortunately, there are no hacker meetings in the country where I'm living. Oh, see, I can't make fun of this guy's English because he's not a native English speaker. Okay.
There we go.
Yeah. I'm still going to call him Booga! Country where I'm living, Netherlands, crazy Dutch people.
Hey, let me tell you, the Netherlands, I went there once. I went to Amsterdam. Those Dutch people speak English better than we do, so don't play
really?
Games.
Oh, okay. All right, good. And he said crazy Dutch people, not me, so don't yell.
Oh, yeah.
So I envy all of you who get to go to the 2600 and all the other meetings. I had to scan the web for days to find simple, basic information about hacking back in the old days. But once I found the right way to find information, things went speedy for me. In my opinion, hacking is the art of information acquiring. Once you have info, the rest is easy. Very true statement. Anyways, man, I wish you all the luck in life and love. Oh, my goodness, not Ethereum. I'm getting verklempt.
I'm overclamped. Talk amongst yourselves.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
That
man.
Is beautiful.
Thank you, Boga. It sounds like that name. It's like I'm throwing up, but like stopping right when it gets to my throat. Boga.
It's like you're throwing up and pooping at the same time.
Oh, that's nasty. You ever sneeze while taking a dump? Boy, that'll shut you off real quick.
Jesus.
Dude, that's instant loaf pinch right there. But boy,
I was going to say, you break your pipes that way, dude.
Exactly, man. It'll scare the crap out of you, especially if you've ever seen the weightlifting picture. But that's a whole other story.
Oh, man. Oh, that's terrible.
That's a recording for another show. Which is actually, is going to be our main topic if we eventually get to it. I said we got a lot of email tonight, but you know what? They're kind of good and fun emails, so we're still going to keep going. We got a few more here. About the meetings. Yeah, meetings are cool and everything. You get to hang out with some like people and talk about, you know, geek and stuff like that. Some are better than others, but basically the meeting is what you make it. So, you know, it's like, yeah, they're cool, but there's no reason you can't start one of your own. You know, you have to take the initiative to start a meeting. So I don't know if you're willing to do that or anything like that, but for myself, for example, my closest meeting is about 45 minutes away, and in rush hour traffic, sometimes an hour. Well, it's usually 45 minutes to an hour in rush hour traffic. So it's like it's a good drive to get out there, and it's not exactly a convenient place. There's no Wi-Fi access. You know, all we do is sit and talk most of the time. There's not presentations as often as I would like, but you know, it's been getting better and having more of those. But anyway, I am actually considering and probably going to be making a move next month to start a meeting closer to me. And I already co-run or co-host or whatever the local DEF CON Hack City meeting, the DC305 meeting. And I participate a lot in the Broward 2600 meeting, which is down in Miami. But those are a little bit too far for me. So I'm going to start a new meeting, and I think I'm actually going to use this as the opportunity to create the first BinRev meeting. Now, I'll probably list it as a 2600 meeting as well. I haven't decided, really. If I do it on the same day, the first Friday of the month, and co-list it as a 2600 meeting or something, but I don't want to get this weird competition thing going, so I'm thinking maybe I'll do it on a different day of the month, maybe have it as a separate meeting. Not sure exactly how I'm going to do with it, but I'm ready to finally start pushing this and having anybody who's interested, and if you really want to take the initiative of starting some BinRev meetings out there. And again, you can co-list them as 2600 meetings as well or whatever, just a hacker meeting. It doesn't really matter what you call it. But what I want to do is I'm going to put up some rules. I'm going to put up some ideas, some suggestions. I'll be glad to work with meetings to do maybe some recordings or do some shows or calls around the meetings to help, you know, get them started, some special incentives or something. Maybe we'll give some prizes or some information on the radio show, et cetera, the magazine. I don't know. I'm going to start brainstorming and coming up with some ideas and really push this forward, give people some web space and let them host it on our site, give them access to be able to put their pictures and their presentations and have them access a website where they don't have to worry about hosting or anything. We'll take care of all that. All this kind of stuff, I'm finally going to try to put this together in the next... Don't rush me. It's going to take me a couple months to get this together just because there's really a lot of organizational work to be done with it. There's not a lot of technical work to be done with it. So I'm going to try to do this. Now, if anybody's interested, you know the email address, radio@binrev.com, and we'll probably make a special address for meetings or something like that. But for now, radio@benrev.com, and let me know, and I will put up information soon and announce it on the show soon as well.
If I could just make a quick suggestion, if you're going to have any type of meeting, wherever you are, I don't care if it's 100,000 miles away from me, please just don't do it on Friday at 5 p.m. It is the worst time ever to have a meeting.
Yeah, I like a Saturday. The DEF CON meeting works out really well.
Even Friday, a little bit later on, just Friday when everybody wants to get out of work to go enjoy their weekend, the exact second that work lets out for the majority of people, why would you have your meeting at that time?
Well, that, technically it starts, I think it's 6, but it, most of them just say right after work. So, like, people, some, a lot of people don't show up to our meeting till like 7, 7.30, 8 o'clock when they're getting out of work or after they've eaten, had supper, and then they come to the meeting. So...
yeah.
It's like a rigid requirement that it starts exactly at 5.
No, I know, but they...
but
they
yeah,
do,
point well taken.
Most of the meetings I've seen are Friday at 5 p.m., and I just don't know why. I think it's really annoying. And I think for, you know, for the younger people who are in the scene, who may not be working yet, they may be in high school or something like that, they can get to the meetings at 5 o'clock. And if they get there at 5 and nobody's there because everybody's just getting out of work, you know, they might be discouraged to coming back, and your meeting may not take off. So if you're going to start a meeting, make it at a time that makes a little more sense. On a weekend or Friday a little later on in the night, just make sure you don't put it at Friday at 5 p.m. That's just annoying.
Yeah, and like I said, that's why it's such a pain for me to go in rush hour traffic down the highway to Miami. I mean, trust me, 95 South, that ain't no joke. So, I agree completely.
Word.
All right, your turn. Why don't you read an email? How about email from unknown entity here?
Yeah, sure. Greetings, Stank Dog and co-host. I guess that'd be me. I'm a big fan of the show, but I've kind of been taking a break from the Hack Freak community over the last year or so. I'm just getting back into the scene now, and I have a few projects I've completed during my absence that I'd like to release an article on. They're both electronics fabrication type projects. I would like to hear any helpful suggestions you may have for writing a professional article for a quarterly or monthly magazine. I've worked on a couple of small text files before, but nothing really worthy of publication in a zine. Any suggestions as far as format for the actual document, use of pictures, etc., would really help me out. By the way, I, unknown entity, prefers Dr. Pepper over the black, foul-tasting fluid known as Coca-Cola. Now, I just got to tell you right now, Coca-Cola pones everybody.
Oh, get... so. Oh, no. You are so, so wrong. Dr. Pepper pones Coca-Cola without even breaking a sweat.
No, you see, the thing is... as far as the Dr. Pepper versus Coca-Cola argument goes...
I didn't know there was one.
Like, to me, they're totally different drinks, so they don't compete at all.
All soft drinks are competitors with each other.
No, I don't think so. Dr. Pepper is a whole different bird. Like, Coke and Pepsi, they compete. I don't know how, because Pepsi sucks so bad I can't even drink it.
Oh,
but
man.
They technically compete because they're both colas.
Cola,
I get Coke. If I want something that tastes different than everything else, I get Dr. Pepper. If I want cream soda, I get Boylan's.
I know what you're saying.
If I want root beer, I get, you know, A&W, something like that. Maybe
right.
Not A&W.
So you're thinking like Sprite versus Mountain Dew would be closer competitors.
Sprite versus 7-Up.
Those
guys are competing.
Okay.
Mountain Dew versus, I don't know, Slice? I don't know what competes against Mountain Dew, really.
I don't know. Sierra Mist?
But yeah, colas. Like, Boylan's and Stewart's, they make cola and root beer and cream soda and, you know, cherries and cream soda and all that kind of stuff. They compete against each other in each different flavor. But I would never say that cream soda competes against root beer because I'd rather drink cream soda any day of the week.
I swear to God, I have no idea how we've spent so much time talking about soft drinks on a hacking show. I never, ever would have predicted...
Hey, I'm just, you know...
I know, but have you been listening?
Lay down the law here.
Have you been listening to the show for, the past couple of months? I mention it in passing as a joke, and somehow it's become, like, the most popular topic ever on the show. It's bizarre. Oh, but Dr. Pepper pones. Anyway.
Dr. Pepper is good stuff. Yeah, definitely.
Definitely good stuff. Let's see, back to the email. Unknown Entity. I actually remember Unknown Entity. He was on the forums a while back, and we had spoken back then and I still am very interested in the articles, and I said it back then, and I still am, that I'd like to have a regular electronic section in Binary Revolution magazine. I've always thought that would be a cool thing, but it's hard enough to find hacking articles. It's even harder to find electronics articles. It really is.
Definitely.
So, on a side note, I've actually been studying some electronic stuff myself lately. I went to Rat Shack and bought one of those teach-yourself electronics at home kits, and it's got like little buzzers and sirens and stuff on it, and the breadboard in the middle, and a little book to follow and make your own products and stuff, projects and stuff. Nah, that shit don't work. It doesn't work.
Yeah. I thought, if you want to learn electronics, you got to go to the bookstore and you got to find like a real thick book that's like not electronics for dummies, but basic electronics, something like that. You got to find something like that and be willing to sit down for a long time to figure it out.
Yeah, but I need the hardware. I want to see what I'm learning. I need to have it visualized. That's why I bought this kit. It's not so much the book. Well, the book is pretty lame. It's just a bunch of projects that they just give you how-to directions. It doesn't explain very well. But the actual device, I can't get it to work. And at first I thought, you know, I'm a noob and I did it wrong. But I checked and triple-checked and I've got everything set up right. I've got all the wires connected, all the voltage. It's just broken. It's just a piece of junk. This is
okay,
the first
Mr.
time.
Okay, Mr. Stankdog, is the power switch on to your computer?
The batteries are in there. It's a little thing. It's a little, like, it's as big as a laptop, a little bit bigger. And you put the batteries in there to give it power and I know the thing's all hooked up right, and it's just not. This is the first thing I've bought from Rat Shack in probably 5 years, and hopefully it'll be another 5 years because they suck. It's a piece of garbage, and I have to take it back, and that's a hassle of going back in there for that and arguing with them to return anything, especially down here.
I was just thinking, if you're the one who's always talking about education, do you have a community college in your area that maybe maybe has an electronics class?
They have prerequisites for the damn class that I want. I don't need to take like basic. The way they break the classes down is weird. I can't get into the electronics classes of the stuff that I want to learn without like joining the program and taking a bunch of silly prerequisite stuff. If you're in it, it's not silly if you're actually pursuing it, but for somebody who, like me, I just want to learn how to, like, sit down with a breadboard and connect things, and, like, I want to be able to take a PCI card, put it in my computer, interface with a microcontroller, and, like, I don't know, make a fucking LED blink my name or something stupid like that, or put together my own AM/FM radio PCI card. I know I can buy it, but I want to learn how to do that type of stuff.
Well, as far as PCI cards go, I don't know that I would. I don't know that I'd go that route. That,
I'm just
that
making
stuff
up.
Is
an,
not easy.
Yeah, I'm just making What's up that? An. I'm just making up an example. There's a lot of other. You know, I just want to learn how.
You know,
resistors
I can recommend something. I hesitate to do it. I'm actually working on a project for a customer of mine right now, and I'm using something called the Export. It's by a company called Lantronics. Their website is not Lantronics.com. I have absolutely no idea what it is. And basically
same,
what it is...
It's not the same Lantronics that makes the printer... what do they call those network printer cards?
You know what? No, it's spelled differently. It's Lantronics. It's IX. So maybe their website is Lantronics.com. They have this product called the Export. And it's basically, it's the size, it's an Ethernet jack that's maybe an inch and a half deep. And it has, I don't know if you're going to believe me on this or not, but in that inch and a half deep Ethernet jack, it has a 486 processor. It has 512K of RAM and 512K of flash. And if you buy the developer kit, it's like $150. You can program this thing in C. And you can, it's got some jumpers on it that you can use for IO pins and stuff like that. And you can hook LEDs up to it and blink and do all that kind of stuff and interface to your network. You can plug it in. You can have it serving web pages and stuff like that. So if you want to get involved in electronics in the sense where you want to interface with something very simple, but you still want to be able to program it, I think the Export, if you're willing to fumble through the documentation, which is kind of lacking, is a good choice. But if you want to get started in real electronics from scratch, that is a whole different beast. And that, in my mind, electronics is way harder than programming.
Yeah.
By leaps and bounds.
Yeah, me too. I agree with that.
So,
All right, we're running low on time. We've got a big announcement to make soon, so we're going to burn through these last two or three emails. To answer the direct question that he made about the articles, any electronics articles, you've got to have pictures and, like, charts and designs and stuff like that. Very important to go along with it because you've got to illustrate what's going on and how and why it's working. So you've got to have a lot of graphics with it. That's one thing I'd recommend. And not all magazines can handle graphics that detailed, and if they do, they're not going to be high-quality pictures, so it's going to be grainy and it's not going to show up very well. Another problem is that a lot of e-zines or online sites or online text files or something, they only allow stuff in plain text. They can't support graphics at all. Or right. You will have to attach your picture separately, and then they'll try to edit it themselves, and they might not put them in the right place, and it won't be referenced properly. So it's pretty messy. We have, from day one, have been very much into that and very much use illustrations to enhance the articles. So we absolutely can handle that. If you do still want to send them to us, of course, we'd be glad to take a look at it. Articles@binrev.com, if you've got to submit the actual article itself to. And the other thing is they can accept just plain text files. We can accept anything. I don't know why people limit themselves to only send us text files. That's 2600. Anything else might not make it. We can take anything. I can convert to anything from anything. I don't know why there's any restrictions on anything like that. So you want to do it in OpenOffice, you want to do it in Microsoft Word, whatever. You know, I'm sure there's some weird, obscure stuff I may have never heard of, but whatever. Just anything just about...
Oh, how about FunWriter for the PC Junior?
I can absolutely convert from... No, I can't.
let me just throw in one last thing. If you're going to submit any articles that have electronic schematics, do it like a professional electronics engineer. Give a list of test points where once somebody has built the circuit, if it doesn't work, you can say... You know, test out, does this point here have, you know, is this point here at 5 volts? Is this point here at 4 volts? You got to give people a way. Once they build your thing and it doesn't work, because it happens all the time with electronics, because people miss small things or something's not soldered correctly, you got to give them a way to troubleshoot your device if it's more complicated than like 4 or 5 parts, because otherwise people are going to build it, it's not going to work, they're going to complain about it, and you're going to get a bad name for it. So always include test points and always include some list of things you can do to troubleshoot the circuit. And as you're building the circuit yourself, you're going to come across problems, and you're going to come across ways to figure out what went wrong, you know, as you build a couple of these things. So you're going to have a list for yourself. So just include that list with the article. You make everybody's life a million times easier.
Very good advice. Very good advice. Okay, let's jump through a couple emails here. I'm going to read these quickly. Next
Work.
Email is from 5is6 is what I'm going with on this one. Is that?
Yeah, I agree.
5is6, I think. Is 5is66?
No, I think it's 5is6.
5is6, that's what I'm going with. Stank Dizzle, thanks for being an occasional yet essential ingredient in my fix for internet radio addiction. Blah, blah, blah. I was recently pulled over here in sunny California and had heard of the concept of challenging the offer in operation by requesting to see his radar. So I naturally demanded the evidence, to which I was replied, quote, I didn't punch it. Perhaps punching it, as I heard, was just another lucky soprano, but I assumed... The implication was that the officer had the option of recording and saving the radar scan or simply scanning it and clearing the radar. When I brought up in court the officer's quote, he simply denied ever saying it, to which our friendly sustainers of justice happily agreed. Point being, unless your cop suddenly can't use the triple time and make it to court, it's easier and safer, mind you, to just slow the fuck down. I'll stop for a little input from you because you might have some insight there.
Yeah, slowing the fuck down might actually work. You know, I heard what you guys were talking about with traffic tickets. I could get into a big, long thing about this because very experienced in the field, unfortunately.
Okay.
But we may have to save that for another show because the Lucky's techniques, I'm sure, work in California. He uses them all the time. In New York, it's a totally different ball game. They have so much freedom in amending things.
That's what I said, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in New York, actually, in certain places in New York, I just a quick, very quick example. I got a parking ticket that had the description of my car, but had the license plate from a car that I got rid of 2 years ago, and had me listed as being in the wrong place. And even though all of this information was wrong, including the date at which I got the ticket, the judge told me that if I ended up taking it to court, the cop in court would just amend the ticket to the correct information, and I'd have to pay the full fine.
That's
so essentially, they don't need any. They don't. The ticket doesn't mean anything in certain places in New York. In New York City, it's different. They have to be accurate. But outside of New York City, they have so much freedom that it's not even worth fighting a lot of these things. Mm. Go in there, say you want to pay a little bit less. You don't have the money to pay it. That's one thing. But don't try to argue semantics with these guys because they will rip you a new one.
All right. Let's see. Five is six. Goes on to say, question time. I am currently interested in learning to program computer languages. I'm wondering if you can recommend a hierarchy of languages starting from a solid foundation and upward. Boy, that's a hole with no bottom there. We're not going to have time to go into that too much. Perhaps there are different models of hierarchy to recommend depending on the intention of the programming. Yes. For example, if landing a good paying job is my intention, the hierarchy language may differ from that from a different intention, such as creation of a game for a PC, etc. P.S. Recommended book for the month, and this is really why I was reading this email. The recommended book for the month is Poker Without Cards, which can be downloaded for free at pokerwithoutcards.com. Despite its luring implication, the book has nothing to do with actual poker playing. Quite a hacker complimentary literature. With love, five is six. I'm just feeling the love this week.
I'm glad you got me on this show because I feel really special now. I'm going to sleep really well tonight.
It's just such a loving show. Just such a loving show this week. We really don't have time to do. Maybe you and I think we would do good to go through a show of talking about languages, their pros and cons, good places to start. I'm going to give a short answer. You may disagree with me, but my short answer is C. My short answer is C and then C++ because understand programming in C, and it's so similar to a lot of other languages. You can go from C to Java. You can go from C to Perl. You can go to C to C++. And learn those object-oriented mindset and object-oriented tasks and stuff, and you can adapt to almost anything. To me, the foundation language is C and C++.
Yeah, I'll give you my quick response right here. If you want to get a job, learn C first. If you want to program for yourself, you want to write like applications, real applications, C first. If you want to do text processing, Perl. If you want to program web pages, PHP. That's it.
Yeah, Perl definitely. Well, HTML, of course, before PHP. You have to know some HTML. Well, yeah, anyway, we'll go into that another day.
Yeah.
That's the short answer. Sorry we couldn't give you more on that one. Next email from Uncle Toxie, who says, Stank and Not Theory, I wanted to provide a little information on the uselesssupport.com software that you have running. I've worked with the software during my tenure with a particular company. You are right in saying that the help system does no good when your connection is down. The main function of the software were to provide information to a new user who is connected. It's fucking useless.
Oh, God.
For instance, if you did not know how to set up your email client, if it was Outlook Express, that is, then you could do a search using the software. You would then be directed to a help page. There was no documentation on how to set it up, and even scripts, ActiveX, if I recall correctly, that would automatically launch the new account wizard for Outlook Express. If you used Thunderbird or Netscape, you were screwed. The whole point was to try and reduce call volume to the support center. How do you like my fast guy talking voice?
Yeah, that's quick.
The other thing that it does is remote access. If you were a support agent, you could walk through a few steps and then be able to remotely control the caller's computer. Oh, it's always handy. This came in very handy from time to time. I can go into greater detail about it later if you wish. On another note, Lucky225 seems like a nice enough kid and very intelligent. Whoa, what has he been listening to? Anyway, nice enough kid and very intelligent. I'm kidding. Lucky's my dog.
I know.
Very intelligent. However, I would like to tell him one thing. If you're going to take the chance of speeding, be a man and take your medicine if you get caught. Saying that, if you are indeed not speeding, then do what you need to do in order to fight it. But you don't need me to tell you that. Finally, Metallica licks the sweat from a dead man's balls. I hope they get hit by a bus and taste their own blood, the fucking sellout chodes must die.
Wow, how does he really feel, though?
Wow, that was, yeah, you know, I don't...
Way to be vague, guy.
Yeah, exactly. yeah, let's see, support.com does suck. Double-click it, and it didn't even do anything except open my browser to take me to a support.com webpage, which is useless if I can't get to the interweb.
Yep.
And here's the thing. Here's a little funny story. Gosh, I hate running out of time. The page that I went to wanted my life story to get chat help. They had one of those live chat things. But they made me fill out all this crap. They wanted the username and blah, blah, blah. I tried to just put in the username, skip all the rest of it, but it would kept giving me the mandatory fields crap. They wanted an address, a phone number, city, state, everything, all this stuff, and it was mandatory. So I was pissed. I just put in stuff. I put in like 123, just fucking help me, street, and don't be nosy, New York. And I just clicked through it. I put 888-555 or 800-555-1212, et cetera. Put all this stuff in there, and then I got, and it went. They don't verify or check anything. They don't care that it's a real username. So I get this lady, this chick. It was a female's name, so I assume it was a chick. And she said, thank you for using support. Can you help me? I said, yes. I just want to know if you're having problems with the DNS service because I'm getting a lot of errors. I didn't even get the thing typed. I typed it in, hit enter. Next thing I know, the box went grayed out. A little message came on that said, it said something to the effect of, I was disconnected, and the comment underneath of it says, you have been disconnected, I did not appreciate the information in your profile. Because I put, just fucking help me, street.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know, I was a dick, but whatever. So, anyway, uninstall the software. Uncle Toxie told you it doesn't do anything. Don't even, just uninstall it. It's worthless. And our last email this week. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm looking forward to this one. Always looking forward to this email. You want to read this one?
Yeah, I think I could do this.
Can you do this?
This email comes from System Shock Zor. And he writes, what the fuck? But what if Metallica sold out? That doesn't mean you can't listen to their music. Just because they want more money. If a drug dealer starts asking for more money, what would you do? Stop smoking weed?
No!
By the way, I'm sorry about the bad jokes and all the things I said about you. I won't bother you again. In fact, I think you're a great person, and I listen to your show every week.
Oh. How can we... Wait a minute. How can we...
Wait, I'm not done yet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He also intelligently adds at the end, P.S. Enough with the spelling jokes. I'm not a native English speaker.
Oh, that's okay. Neither are we. We're 80s rock band speakers. Wild Stallions! Oh, man. Okay. Well, you know, wait a minute. Hold on. First of all, if a drug dealer starts asking for more money, what do I do? Find a different drug dealer. What the fuck is a common sense with that?
Yeah, that's not really an intelligent comment.
Yeah, that's not a good one.
That doesn't really make much sense.
Right, Metallica.
If somebody was trying to sell you a car for 20 times over MSRP, what would you do? You'd go to a different dealership.
Exactly. But I like how he combined drugs with Metallica. Thanks for associating that. Yeah, Metallica is not the only band out there. There's other ones. So I stopped supporting Metallica and find other talented bands that are out there. And don't cry all the time and call me a thief for downloading their music. So what's so difficult about that? Anyway, and, oh, come on, man, you're not going to bother me anymore? Don't bother me again? That's not cool. I mean, I'm looking forward to my System Shock Sore fix every week. I got to have my System Shock Sore insults. And who are we going to use this screaming 80s rocker voice on?
Oh, my God. I don't know. We'll work it into somebody.
Yeah, and for our PS,
we'll find.
Binary Revolution Radio does not condone smoking weed or any other illegal substance.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, dude, I don't know what the hell we're going to do. We're going to have to edit something out or something because we're at 124 now. And let's just skip the personal hacking show and tell because it's kind of our show and tell is the main topic tonight. And that is a short 5-minute announcement of, well, I guess I'll let you make the announcement because you're the one that's been putting most of the work in on this.
All righty. I'm really bad at these announcement things. I never really know what to say. But
all right, well, I'll announce it and you explain it. How about that?
What's that?
I said I'll announce it and you explain it.
I can handle it. I think I got it here.
Right,
we are going to be doing a new weekly show, which is a little different than the shows that we've been doing now. And the name of the show is Freak Factor, and it's basically the first hacker reality radio show. And it's not going to be like any of these other shows. We're not going to have any topics to talk about. We're just basically going to call up to to the PBX. We're going to hop on the air. We're going to talk about whatever the hell we want. And that's about it. We're just going to have fun with it and see what happens. Some weeks, if you've been hanging out conferences ever in the freak scene, some weeks conferences are really cool, a lot of fun to listen to. Some weeks they suck. Some weeks you have Tron toning it out. You know, it's just what happens. And we're going to add in some features where eventually the users will be able to go to the website. And if somebody's really pissing you off, you can just vote them off of the conference. And every half hour or so, we'll do that. And people will just get fucking hung up on. That's it.
Survivor style.
Somebody being an asshole, you and your buddies vote them down, and he's gone.
Can they form alliances and vote people off? And
oh, yeah. It's going to be totally style. Ridiculous. Because personally, I think reality TV is ridiculous. I think this is our way of, you know, making fun of it and having a good time at the same time.
It really is going to be fun. We do have some fail safes in there. We're going to have a way to try to identify people who are willing participants, that is, who want that worked out that way. And if something comes up where we have like a topic we want to discuss and we want to actually go into detail about, and someone is being a Tron and toning us out or whatever, we're looking into ways to address that as well. But again, I like the aspect of this of the reality. Because, yes, we're in a way we're making fun of it, but at the same time, this is a reality show. If Tron or some other people come in and do start toning it out, that's part of it. That's part of the reality to me, and that's what's going to make it unique and interesting, and you never know. This is going to give everybody who doesn't already hate Tron a whole new way to start hating Tron.
But this will also give people who are not making shows yet to, you know, kind of have the floor if they want, if they've got a topic they want to talk about and we're hanging out in there, we think they've got something worthwhile saying, we can give them the floor. We can mute everybody out if we think it's important, and they can go on and talk about a topic. You know, we could interview people who we've never spoken to before, who we can't get on the show normally. They can just call into the conference, and we have a lot of flexibility from this. I built a little administrative interface for Asterisk to handle a show like this, and there's a lot of flexibility. And some weeks we may not even be there. Some weeks it'll just be people hanging out. And if you just want to call up and hear yourself on the radio stream, you can do that. You know, everything's going to be automatic. So if we're not there, the show's going to go on the air without us. It's fine. But if we're there, you know, we'll be able to throw in some extra fun things that people can do and start voting people off and doing all kinds of nonsense. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Some weeks may suck. Some weeks may be great. But that's the whole fun of it. You know, you never know what's going to happen.
Right. And this is going to be, right now, tentatively, we're looking towards Saturday night. This is going to be our Saturday night live, if you will. And, again, I want to reemphasize that this is not an invite-only thing. This is not a we choose who's talking or whatever. The way this is going to work is you're going to be able to go to the site, and let's go ahead and move into the closing. The site of the week is going to be, obviously, freakfactor.net. That's freakphactor.net. And we're going to put that information up on that site when the time comes. We will be starting this week, this weekend, this upcoming Saturday. And anybody who wants to be on will simply call the number, follow the directions, punch in the proper codes, and you will be instantly put live onto the air. Now, there's a delay from the time it takes to relay the signal from server to server to server, et cetera, the way things are set up, but you are, for the most part, live on the radio. You will be able to tune in to DDP Hack Radio, where it is being streamed. Whatever everybody and anybody says, and there are disclaimers that warn that you are being broadcast, so be careful what you say, don't do anything stupid, and if you do, guess what, you blew it, because anybody and everybody can hear this. The other thing to point out, I'm not going to point that out, I'm going to save that for later, because we haven't decided on that yet, but site of the week, freakfactor.net, not there, anything else before we close here? Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, if anybody's got any suggestions for the show, if you think, you know, you want to add a cool feature, something for you guys to be able to do on the website while the show's running, definitely email me. I am open to anything. You know, I just sat down and wrote a lot of code to handle this, and I think I can add on new stuff fairly easily. So I'm down for whatever.
You open for anything?
We'll talk about that when I come visit you down there.
All right, baby. Double penetration time.
Jesus.
All right, let's see, shouts. I've got to give a big list of shouts, so I hope, let's see, we're running low on time, but everybody in IRC right now, we are recording. It is later than I had hoped, but I'm going to run down the people in IRC on Dalnet, our new IRC channel, which has been very active and lots of fun and good conversation. First of all, to Zapperlink. Biggest shouts, because he's the one that did a lot of the work helping us set this thing up. Huge shouts to Zapperlink, registering everything, setting up all the auto ops, and some other things that we're working on right now that are going to be fun, like I mentioned before. Not going to list the DDP people. Screw them. They suck. And I'm going to go down the list alphabetically here. Bushy, B-U-S-H-I, Capaneus, C-A-P-A-N-E-U-S, Default, oh my goodness, Dalnet Sex Mercs, I have no idea, D-O-L-N-E-T-S-X-M-I-R-M-Y-R-X, Droops, our good friend Droops, Encrix, actually I think she said that's Encryption, Encryption X, Encrix, whatever. File Not Found, Fubster, Gen 2 is Crap. Somebody wanted to hear that on the radio, obviously. Hackwood, Jotun, Kerpop, Lucky, no, I'm not reading Lucky, screw him. Mobile Digit, Nyx, Renegade 334, Cypher, Steve Cronin, Super Duper, Tom, Upside Down, Zeno, Hideo, and, oh, Nick 84, okay, I'll give him shouts, Nick's cool. So, to everybody in IRC, thank you for helping us get this channel moved over and cooperating and everything. It's already being really fun for me so far. I've been hanging out as much as possible. I'm idling all the time. And, I mean, I'm looking right now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 DDP members in there right now. So, it's a good way for us to all keep in touch. So, shouts to everybody there. And, again, email us, radio@benrev.com. Our closing music this week is Hex Error, H-E-X-E-R-R-O-R. It's called Deer Lodge Prison. And Not Theory, thank you for being on the show. Man,
no problem.
I'm telling you, we got to do this again, maybe next week or sometime soon when you get time.
Yeah,
I know you've been busy.
Possibly.
We got a lot of stuff to spill over.
Let me just give three quick shouts.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sorry. Yeah, any shout-outs that you have, go ahead.
Yeah, very quickly. I want to give shout-outs to Tycom. He's been on the forums. He's been in the scene for a long time, and I have to attribute him. He is the guy who got me into the scene. So many props to him. You may not like to hear this, but I'm going to give shouts to GBPPR, the Green Bay Professional Packet Radio guys. They've had some problems with us in the past, but if you want to look up schematics of cool radio stuff, those guys have it. When it comes to radio stuff, they seriously know what they're talking about. And I would just like to say hello to my girlfriend and hope that she gets through all this stuff she's going through right now. I wish her the best, her family the best, all that. So that's all I got.
Yeah, I second that. And that GBPPRCOLMNOR through D2 or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't. The thing is, they contradict themselves. My issue with them is simply on one page they have us linked as noobs, and then on another page they list us as a great printed alternative to 2600, who they also hate apparently. So I don't know what their deal is.
Let me just be very clear. They have good schematics for radio projects, and that's all I know about them.
Yeah, I don't know what their deal is. I don't know if they hate us or not, but either way, I don't care. Fuck them. All right, so that's going to be it. So, again, Not Theory, thank you. And everybody listening, we will see you again next week. Ow! Same hack time!
Same hack channel!